Hi, I'm Andrew Levine, the CEO of Koinos Group, and we are extremely excited to announce that we are open sourcing our first bit of Koinos code. It's Koinos Types, which we've spoken about before. And today I'm gonna interview one of my co-founders and one of the blockchain architects of Koinos, Steve Gerbino. He's gonna tell us a little bit about his background, how he came to be working on Koinos, and why developers should be interested in Koinos Types, interested in learning more about it, and possibly even contributing to Koinos Types. So Steve, why don't you start by telling us a little bit about your background?
I worked in software for a while. I started as a web dev before college. After that, I went and worked in fintech for 6 years, and I worked in a commodity trading platform. And I got the opportunity through LinkedIn to work in cryptocurrency for the Steam blockchain.
Plug for LinkedIn.
Yeah. And I was, I was like, definitely, I'll leave oil trading for cryptocurrency any day. So yeah, I went through that interview process, got hired at Steemit. I worked there, really enjoyed it, really enjoyed my coworkers. And that leads me to where I am today.
So how would you explain Koinos Types to someone who doesn't know how microservices work?
So I actually added this to the description of the repo. I was pretty happy with it. But I think of it as like the Rosetta Stone of Koinos data structures, right? Because we wanted multiple languages to be able to understand blocks, transactions, like fundamental data types in the blockchain, right? And we needed them for like inter-process communication. So we need to know how to interpret blocks in Golang. We needed to know how to interpret blocks in C++, TypeScript, more languages, right? We want them to all communicate with each other. So we needed a way to define a block and have that written in multiple languages, which is exactly what the Rosetta Stone did. I think it was like, you know.
Exactly.
It was exactly.
For blockchains.
Like Greek and Hebrew or whatever it was. But essentially, that's what Koinos Types does. So now you're language agnostic. Like, it doesn't matter. You know, as long as you're one of these supported languages, you can now interoperate with other microservices. So that's essentially what Koinos Types does.
So did you guys have to develop Koinos Types effectively because Koinos will be the first blockchain built on a microservices architecture? Because generally we don't like building new software if we don't have to.
There was multiple reasons to develop Koinos Types. And part of that was some of the experiences we had working for Steam. And part of that was to make life easy developing this in a microservice architecture. So one of the pain points in Steam was that we would update, we would add or change an operation. And then there was all these client libraries written in JavaScript that we'd have to go around updating or helping third parties update in order to take advantage of new features. It would be really nice if that was just done automatically. And that's something that Koinos Types addresses, right? When we make a change to internal stuff, the Koinos Types would, anyone who relies on Koinos Types would automatically get updated, right? That's huge. It saves a lot of work, a lot of like mindless updating work, tedious stuff. As far as the microservice architecture side, we could have written every single microservice in C++ and not needed a translation layer. But we can spin up microservices much quicker if we write it in a language like Golang. So it actually speeds us up in development to be able to have the main chain in C++, but make a block store in Golang, or P2P in Golang, but they still need to communicate with each other. And that is also what Koinos types would do. And then we have that whole, you know, we have this ambition of making smart contracts in multiple languages. So we're yet again going to need that same technology there. So it made a lot of sense to develop this module that gave us the data structures in all the languages we hope to support. So it was like a win-win-win, really.
So where does RabbitMQ come into the equation, and what does it accomplish?
I'm pretty excited about our choice to use RabbitMQ. It's basically a protocol. It's AMQP. I think it's Advanced Message Queuing Protocol. But basically, since we broke up the node into separate microservices, we now introduce a requirement where each microservice needs to communicate with each other. And there's, you know, we could have taken any route of how to accomplish that, but message queues makes a lot of sense, because when certain events happen, multiple microservices may need to know about that. For instance, if you process a block submission and it is successful, right? You want to store that in the block store. You also want to advertise to other peers on the network that you know about this block and can tell other peers about it. And instead of the message queue system allows that all to happen at once, basically, like a broadcast. And it really makes it clean, because, you know, there may be n number of microservices, right? There may be more in the future. And to like string all them up separately, you know, you could end up with a real mess of a network. But if you use this protocol, this is just one of the many ways we could have done it, this particular one makes that very clean. You know, so anyone who needs to know when a block or a transaction is accepted can simply, you know, subscribe to that queue and get notified. And, you know, that's actually pretty powerful, especially for, you know, developers. We are pretty, you know, we see the value in giving tools to developers, right? The better apps that are created on the chain, the better value the chain provides, you know, the world, right? So this is a nice thing on top that we get for it, is that another developer can say, you know, I care about this smart contract, for instance. You know, what happens on my smart contract? So I could update my web interface. And they, like, they're a first class citizen in this microservice cluster. They can hear that message. They can interpret it with Koinos types in the language of their choice and update their back end. So that's powerful. There's a lot of benefits to doing it. I think it's going to work out really well.
RabbitMQ, even though it's interconnected or it's related to Koinos types, it's this interesting, not almost counterexample, where by choosing to build a novel microservice architecture, created this opportunity to leverage a pre-existing piece of enterprise-grade software in RabbitMQ, something we're not developing from scratch, but it's super robust. Lots of people use it. There's lots of eyeballs on it. It's a great solution to this specific problem. Nobody else that we know of is actually using it, because nobody else is really using a microservice architecture. So it solves a very specific problem within the stack of enabling communication between microservices, but we get another win out of it, because it provides this organized queue that developers can listen to power their apps. Is that right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah.
It might be helpful for people to understand Koinos types, RabbitMQ, by talking about a specific example, one of our favorite applications, Splinterlands. how could they leverage this microservice architecture, Coinos types, RabbitMQ to make their application and their business better in some way?
So there's, I guess, several ways that it could help someone like Splinterlands. At the very basic level, they probably would have a smart contract on Coinos that would, you know, keep track of users' cards, right? Or battles that occur within the game. And I don't know, you know, I'm not part of their team. I don't know how they're scraping that data from the blockchain currently. But what I can say is with RabbitMQ and Coinos types, it would definitely be very clean and very advantageous for them. Particularly, they can essentially be running a cluster, or someone else could run a cluster, and they could listen for messages that they care about. And those messages might be actions a user takes, or you know, items a user receives. And when those things happen, they don't have to poll. They can just hear through the message queue what is occurring and go and update maybe their backend database that they use to you know, present the state of the game on a website, right? So it would be pretty, I'm not aware of a current middleware that's kind of built in that handles this cleanly. This is one of the cleanest things I can see for this type of situation, where you're just listening to messages and whatever you care about, you squirrel away in your database and you present it to the user. And so that would be, you know, listening with RabbitMQ to understand the messages that are coming through would be Coinos types, right? So you'd hear new messages. What is this message? Coinos types will tell you what that message is. And then you can then use it in your custom application. Another interesting thing that could occur is that maybe Splinterlands doesn't want to run a node. Maybe they only care about what happens to their smart contract. And they could actually offload running a node and the entire cluster, and then actually just have a microservice that taps into the MQ server. And so from their point of view, all they have is a microservice that lives outside. They don't care about, they're not in the business of running blockchain nodes, right? They're in the business of running a game. And for their game, this microservice is what, you know, what listens to the blockchain and understands and takes care of that. So they could, you know, it could definitely change the game as far as how the business is run.
And so that sounds a lot less costly in terms of infrastructure and engineering resources, probably going to drop your cost in terms of like labor and infrastructure. Maybe it would help to explore how you would solve those problems without Coinos types or RabbitMQ. You have to get, presumably what they've done is built their own middleware that solves these same problems. But I suspect that their middleware probably is a lot more complicated and a lot more resource intensive, not because of anything they're doing wrong, but because of the option, right? Because of how they have to build it.
Yeah, yeah. I would imagine the same thing. So, you know, one solution is, you know, it's not ideal, but you could pull, right? You pull the node, querying new blocks that come in, taking that data and indexing it, you know, in some middle layer solution in a way that can be used by your application. It's much less efficient to do it that way. And, you know, it presents a whole bunch of other problems, like, you know, what happens if there's a fork, you know what I mean? Or, you know, the main fork switches, you're polling for the latest blocks, all of a sudden the, you know, ancestry changes, and you now have to do like fork resolution in middleware. You know, it gets messy, right? You want to avoid that if possible. That's just one way. Probably most of them are done like that. And, you know, it's difficult to get right and it's inefficient. And, you know, you create this monstrosity that you have to live with. So it would be really nice to avoid that altogether. And you can do that with this particular solution, right? Because you're actually a first class citizen of the cluster, right? You're not polling a server, reconciling data and trying to set it up correctly. You have access to the information in the same way that block stores have access or P2P have access, you know? So, yeah.
It's really interesting. It's one of those solutions that, and I feel like we've got a lot of these in Coinos where you're like, that's really simple. It almost seems obvious within the context of the project. And then you're like, could that be a game changer? Right? It's kind of like that, yeah. Right? Like that's going to make things, that's a big change in terms of developer experience. And it doesn't seem like it.
It definitely seems like a game changer to me personally. I mean, you know, we always come while we're developing Coinos, we're always thinking, you know, if we were a developer trying to write a dApp, you know, how painful would this be? How wouldn't it be nice if? And by asking those questions, actually, you actually inspired this thought process a little bit. You're like, hey, you know, could we have third party developers like hook into this without, you know, without much difficulty? And that kind of got the thought process about message queues for me personally. So, yeah,
I'll take it.
It's always thinking from the outside, right? It's like, how do we empower these dApp developers to make awesome decentralized applications? And that really inspires the architecture that we're trying to come up with. You deserve the credit.
Well, I can't say anything without sounding like I'm heaping praise back at us. But thank you. Yeah, and it's cool to see that. It's definitely what it's. Yeah, it's great. So for a developer, a software engineer who's finding Coinos types, we've explained it. We've explored it. Is there some short way to explain? Why should a developer or an engineer who maybe doesn't even understand any of this stuff, but is a smart developer or engineer, why should they get excited about Coinos types? Why should they take a look at it and hopefully think about contributing to it?
Well, Coinos types is just the beginning, but I would say, if I were to put it simply, I would say that MQ changes how you can get the data. And Coinos types is like the translation of that data. So with those two modules, those two repositories together, I think it's going to open up the possibilities. I think developers are going to look at these tools, and once they understand them, hopefully we can explain it in a way that they understand well. They're going to see, hey, I can do this. This allows me to do X, Y, and Z easily. We need to make it easy for them, for everybody to just hook in and hit the ground running. And when you understand these two components, I think that you will come to that realization that, hey, for the first time, we can hook in to a blockchain and do things easier.
Like Coinos is this open protocol, to use your terminology, for flinging blocks around a P2P network. And what makes Coinos types so exciting to us is that this is this nascent component for translating those blockchain-specific features into any programming language that compiles to WASM, which will probably be like all programming languages. So this is like the beginning of people being able to program a blockchain in any programming language, and they can help like advance that development.
When it comes to smart contracts and Coinos type, yes, they have to compile to WASM. But outside of that, like client code, if you want to just like query blockchain nodes or whatever, even if they don't have WASM support yet, you could still interpret these, I guess, fundamental blockchain data types, I guess we could call them, right? Blocks, transactions, operations, smart contract, whatever. These are like fundamental blockchain data types, essentially. And we want, you know, whatever language you're comfortable in, we want you to be able to work in your language where you feel most productive and have access to everything that we have access to internally, externally. So Coinos Types provides that. And I think that's a big deal for sure.
And if it doesn't yet, you can get in there and help it get that support so that you can use the programming language you love.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the more languages we add that are, you know, to be supported by Coinos Types, the better the ecosystem. Right now, you know, we put C++ in there, we put Golang in there, we're going to put in TypeScript because these are, you know, what we've identified as high value targets, right? That might be different for someone else out there. And if someone else wanted to contribute support to their favorite language, I mean, that's great. That's amazing. That's what it's about, right? Open source software.